Welcome to On DoD on Federal News Radio 1500 AM. Now your host, Jared Serbu.
Thanks for listening to Federal News Radio 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Thanks for joining us. This week's show is part of a theme on Federal News Radio this week. It's a multimedia series on federal financial management on the air and at federalnewsradio.com. We call it Rise of the Money People. Financial management moves front and center. Our guest for the full hour is one of the Defense Department's top financial management officials. Mark Easton is DoD's Deputy Chief Financial Officer. He has been one of DoD's senior money people ever since he became a defense civilian employee back in 2002. Before that, he wore a Navy uniform for 29 years and served many of those in the financial management community, too. In this interview, we focus exclusively on DoD's path toward auditability. It's an update to a show we did a little over a year ago with Easton's immediate boss, Bob Hale, the DoD comptroller. I started our conversation by asking him what progress the department has made over that past year.
I think that we have continued to stick with our game plan. We've been successful at what we talk about as getting out of the locker room, if you will, to use a March Madness analogy, I guess, when people are thinking about basketball these days, and onto the court so that we're actually playing. Secretary Hale mentioned that we were trying to move people into examinations, which are small audits, limited scope audits, so that they could get some good feedback. So we've been able to do that. And I think that we've been fairly successful. We don't always get the outcome that I think we might hope for, but more importantly, we know exactly where we stand.
But those sort of negative outcomes are something to be expected, right? Because this is a new process for the department, and you're probably not going to succeed on the first time out.
Absolutely, absolutely. I like to think of this as a big, small change. It's a big change because it's a different way of doing the business that we have. In terms of presenting your business to an auditor, oftentimes we view auditors as trying to go after our faults. Mm-hmm. A financial audit, and we're trying to make a point of this, a financial audit really is more like a trainer. Is trying to be able to elevate the discipline of our business. And so that feedback, I think, is very, very helpful, and we're trying to take advantage of it.
And as I understand it, most of the way that's worked is you've brought in the help of big CPA firms who are experienced in this arena. How important, and that's a relatively new effort from what I understand, 3-4 years old maybe. Correct my timeline if I'm wrong on that, but how important has that been?
It's been very, very important. I mean, we've had CPA firms, if you will, consulting for us and helping us. And those have been very helpful, and we've been using those, some organizations, for longer than others. But with these examinations, we're trying to get CPA firms almost like a referee, mm-hmm. To be able to come in and tell us things, sometimes tell us things that we need to hear, not just what we want to hear.
Mm-hmm. Anything you can say about the results of those examinations so far, either what they have taught you or what the ultimate outcomes have been that you would consider success stories?
I think on the examination front, we've in many cases learned what we already probably should have known from other things in terms of identifying some basics that we just are not doing a very good job of. One of the key things is to try to identify, as we look at a business process, all the way from the beginning of the requirement to the final posting of the transaction, and in between that, you post business events as you go. Sometimes we're finding that we're not, posting those things properly. In some cases, the ERPs that we've implemented, some of these large business systems, require some adjustments. We did not configure them exactly as we should have, which is another learning opportunity. So a variety of issues, I think, that we knew that we needed to work on.
So is it fair to say that the business processes were structured or designed in a way that they were not audit-friendly, I'll say, and you have to restructure those processes so that they are?
In many cases, that's exactly what the situation is. I think that many of our business processes have been supported with systems, many which are older, that didn't maintain the integrity of the process end-to-end. And as we've implemented the new systems, wherever we can, we try to get that whole process within that particular system, and so the system can do the hard work. But even without those systems, we find that the financial audit requires that we do a better job as we go to reconcile and keep that end-to-end process linked together. I mean, one of the things that that is a strength of the department is the fact that we're very mission-focused, and we tend to focus around our particular organization. Mm-hmm. One of the other things with the financial audits is we have to get many organizations and many functional areas working together. And to be able to do that, we need to make sure that everybody understands the game plan. And so that's we're trying to focus on that as part of our audit preparation.
And one of the problems that I've heard identified by some of the outside observers, I guess, is that there is not a whole lot of authority within the DoD Comptroller's office to enforce sort of top-down standards and get everybody on the same page as you were just describing. Is that an accurate assessment from your point of view?
I think there is something to that assessment. You know, what we're trying to do is to be able to provide the appropriate incentives to be able to do that. One of the things that we have begun doing is to ensure personnel performance appraisals consider the success of our financial audit efforts, starting first with the most senior people. And so senior executives this past appraisal cycle and then going into this next appraisal cycle will have an element in their performance appraisals unless they have a very unique job, because in most cases senior executives, flag and general officers, are responsible for managing resources.
Mm-hmm.
We'll be able to do that. So we're trying to look for incentives. You know, many times positive incentives are difficult to find. We need to make sure that we elevate the priority of this to make sure people will focus on it. One of the things I might say, Jared, is that we're trying to drive this into the field so that a commander is focused on the mission readiness of the organization. You know, we provided checklists, and those checklists have been distributed so that the commander has that checklist available to be able to evaluate their business readiness. And so by measuring people's performance, we can begin to use performance as a lever.
And that's important, right? Because so many of the people that are so key to this process are not in the financial management community. They're not audit professionals, but if they don't get on board, this doesn't work.
Absolutely. And that was one of the things as we look back, and many people say, why has it taken the Department of Defense so long? And in many cases, I think that many of the financial management community thought we could do this for other people. It really requires an effort that goes well beyond the financial management community. How we write contracts, how we manage personnel actions that have to be translated to pay, all of those things, the accuracy, the consistency, the documentation, come into play in a financial audit. So it's not just a financial management issue.
Mm-hmm. Going back to authorities, nobody with more authority than the Secretary of Defense, and everybody you talk to about this issue says it was just a huge sea change when Secretary Panetta publicly came out and said, all right, everybody, we're doing this. I assume you agree with that assessment. Say some words about that, and then let us know if you could whether you've had time to have that conversation with your new secretary, Secretary Hagel.
I think when Secretary Panetta made the announcement in October of 2011, we refer to it as a game changer. It made a significant difference. There was a variety of some people might call them impediments, other people might call them excuses. But people would say, well, I'm interested in this, but my boss is not. The commander is not. And when Secretary Panetta came out very clearly and very publicly and said, this is something that we need to do. It's the right thing, and we can do it, but we need to make it a priority. It made a big difference. Secretary Hagel now answered several questions in his confirmation hearings that indicated that he was every bit as committed. He sent a letter to a group of congressman on our House Armed Services Committee very recently. We've recently had a meeting chaired by the Deputy Secretary, and the Deputy Secretary has provided that update to Secretary Hagel. But I think that kind of top-level engagement will absolutely continue.
I want to go back to something you said earlier, which I believe what you said was that you found that some of your systems, business processes, really don't maintain the integrity of information throughout the entire chain. I mean, can you think of examples that would illustrate that for our listeners and maybe make it a little bit less abstract as to what some of the problems have been out there?
I think it's many times we focus on the business outcome of a particular event. And so writing a contract, for example, you know, to be able to write that contract and ensure that we get the material or services as required has clearly been the focus. You know, second to that, looking back, is the focus of making sure that the contractor is paid accurately and on time. And that, so those things continue. What has not been as consistent focus is recording the accounting events. And so the interfaces between a separate system, we have a standard procurement system that writes a contract, getting that information conveyed into another system, an accounting system, has been problematic. In many cases, sometimes there's data standards that are involved and so forth. But, you know, it creates inefficiency in the fact that someone has to go in and fix something. And from an audit perspective, it's problematic because we haven't got that transaction recorded properly. It carries through because oftentimes we'll disperse, we'll actually write the check out of a separate system. And so you get these myriad systems have to be tied together properly. What we've tried to do with our new systems is to do many more of those functions all within the same system. But even without that, because we can't afford to wait for this for financial audit readiness for some of our new systems, even before that, we need to do a better job of reconciling the systems to make sure once we write a contract in one system, it's properly recorded financially, so we know how much money we have available at a given point in time.
Mm-hmm. I've heard Secretary Hale, the comptroller, your boss, say many times that while it is true that we are not in compliance with audit standards yet, we can show Congress where the money is going, how it's being spent. Given the weaknesses you just described, how can you be sure of that, and why should Congress have that confidence?
We think that we, at a given point in time, can demonstrate that we're showing you where the money is going. But clearly, we have not been able to demonstrate that to a standard, to an audit, a financial audit standard. So at a given point in time, there may be issues where we're not in balance. But we're slowly but surely going through all of our processes. We started with appropriations received. We've had an independent public accounting firm be able to go through the components, and we've just completed a mock audit for our other defense organizations to be able to demonstrate that process to make sure that the money that is being spent and allocated and spent is properly recorded in the systems. And so we can clearly show the outcomes. Many times, I think of this as operating on a continuum. So we're not out of control. We can show that the money that has been appropriated has been providing products and services and mission support without a doubt. But we're not at the level where we can demonstrate that to an outside third party. And so that's really the transition that we're trying to make, that we're trying to elevate our game in a way that we have that confidence that's demonstrated to a third party.
So you have financial information. It's just not at the level of granular detail that an auditor would require. Is that a fair way of putting it?
Correct. That's absolutely correct. And we may have confidence based, using experience. And using what we feel is a very, very dedicated workforce to ensure that we have confidence that we're making the best decisions with the information that we have available. But it's not at the level of granularity that we can present it. To give you another example, a financial auditor would like to take a look at controls. You can never absolutely issue an opinion solely based on substantive testing or checking each and every transaction in an organization this large. And so there must be reliance on controls. Those controls, which we may have in place, if they're not properly documented, the financial auditor doesn't have the same confidence that we might have in you. Say, if you're a budget analyst and you've been doing this job for many, many years, exactly what's going on. That financial auditor needs to take a look at how that control was executed, the fact that your supervisor took a look at that. Those kinds of things are measures that we think we need moving forward, and we haven't thought of it that way in the past. But we're making progress, and we're being able to build those kinds of changes into our day-to-day processes.
Mm-hmm. Mark Easton is the Defense Department's Deputy Chief Financial Officer. A quick break, and then we'll come back to talk about DOD's incremental approach to audit readiness and why 23 years after the passage of the CFO Act, DOD is still not there. This is On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serville. Welcome back to On DoD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servu. As we get back to our conversation with Mark Easton, DoD's Deputy CFO, we're talking about DoD's progress toward audit readiness with one of its legal deadlines for audit just around the corner in 2014. Before the break, he told us DoD knows where it's spending its money, even if it can't prove that to the satisfaction of auditors. But he says the department does need to prove that, and it's taking the process piece by piece.
Back to something you said a moment ago. You talked about working on appropriations received. Next thing, I think, is statement of budgetary resources. It seems like you're kind of taking this in bites. Is that a change to the way the department has tackled this problem in the past?
It's. I think if you go back into the 90s, this requirement started in 1994. Actually, it goes back to 1990, the CFO Act, and then there was another act passed in 1994, the Government Management and Reform Act, that required audited financial statements. And so I think that during that period of time, we thought this would happen. We thought it would happen naturally. And when Secretary Hale arrived in 2008, 2009 timeframe, and he looked back over our processes, we needed to take a good look and address some of the issues. And you'd mentioned one before, is that we thought that we could do this strictly as a financial management community without involving the entire enterprise and people in the other doing business for us. Over that period of time, you know, we went back to the drawing board and said, let's focus on things that are important to our mission, our budget execution, things that we have very, very a lot of confidence in internally, but we need to be able to convey that confidence through a financial audit, and existence and completeness. And so we've identified priorities. We went back to our guidance to make sure that we had good consistency, because one of the other things that we had many different parts of the department, some of which have actually been audited, smaller agencies and large, you know, relatively straightforward trust funds. But for the larger components, there was just a variety of approaches. And so we tried to get everyone focusing on things that resonate with the rest of the department, since we had to get the rest of the department involved. We've stuck with that, and I think that it's going to be the winning formula. It will ensure that we're, from a budgetary perspective, you know, capturing the transactions that we need. We're going to be able to use those transactions to next go after the balance sheet, to be able to have all of our statements fully auditable in the 2017 timeframe.
Mm-hmm.
You know, we haven't quite got an opinion on the Marine Corps general fund schedule of budgetary resources. That's the most recent. We expect to hear back any day now. This is on their 2012 statements, and what we did was we focused them and are setting a model for what we think is going to be the other military components as well. So if you really step back and look at those things, you would find over $100 billion of budgetary execution that's actually already being audited now. And if you compared that, and this is where we get into trouble from a defense perspective, we're so large, we're such a huge enterprise, that when you compare that with the rest of the federal government, you know, probably that dollar value itself would put you somewhere in the middle of all the cabinet-level agencies. So, but we've got a long ways to go. That's only about 15% of our budgetary resources. But we're very high on the progress. We don't want to understate the challenges that we have, but we think we're making good progress.
You mentioned the Marine Corps audit that you're expecting soon. How confident are you on it? Do you want to offer a prediction on how that's going to come out?
I look at this in several ways. The first thing is that, you know, some people says, well, you know, they've been doing this for several years. I think that they started with the 2010 statements, and over that period of time, the first year, they were unable to complete the audit at all. So we've gone through with 2012 by making some adjustments, and one of the adjustments that we made is that we're focusing for these first-year audits on the current year execution. An audit requires you to have sort of the baseline, which an auditor would call a beginning balance, as well as execution. And so we're saying, you know, we're going to pick up those beginning balances, but we're going to start and make sure that we're confident in what we're executing using those business processes today. So that's actually what the Marine Corps audit opinion will and I'm confident, but I know better than to ever second guess an auditor right now. So they finished the audit successfully, and I think that over time, that's going to do two things for us. Number one, it's going to set an example. One thing that I think, knowing from my military experience, is that there's a fair amount of competition with the services. So I hope that the Commandant of the Marine Corps will be able to lean on his colleagues on the Joint Staff to say, I want to be the first to do it, and I'm waiting for you all to follow. So I hope that that's what will happen very soon. The other thing that's equally important is that we'll have something to look at, that we can really begin to model the other services, because the Marine Corps, while reflecting the complexity of a warfighting element and military component, is still relatively small, part of the Department of Navy. The Navy, Army, and Air Force are going to be another order of magnitude in terms of size and complexity. Mm-hmm. But we're feeling good.
Larger, but also just different in almost every way, right? So, I mean, to what degree, if the Marine Corps does get an unqualified opinion, to what degree can you copy and paste the lessons that they learned to the other services?
I think that there's some lessons that are going to be very comparable. I think that there's an issue of audit infrastructure, just being able to support the audit that the Navy is already using, since the Marine Corps and the Navy are all in the same department. But I think that the other activities in terms of what it takes to be able to support this audit will be directly applicable. Other things that I'm absolutely confident from my own experience that the financial audit found in the Marine Corps, the ability to reconcile funds balance with Treasury, sort of balance our checkbook with Treasury, practices that we have used in all the services that I would say in my experience are maybe shortcuts, where we don't know exactly how much a particular element may cost, and so we'll do a bulk obligation, we'll estimate. And at the same time, we need to have the discipline to go back and constantly reconcile that. So I'm sure that some of those things are going to resonate and be, in fact, the other components are actually finding much the same thing. So I think that there's going to be a lot that will translate directly. There may be exceptions, but I haven't heard too many things that are unique.
Our guest for this week's On DoD is Mark Easton, the Pentagon's Deputy Chief Financial Officer. We'll have more after a short break on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Servio. Back on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This is On DoD. I'm Jared Serbu. Mark Easton is our guest this week as part of our special multimedia series across the station, on the radio, and on the web. It's called Rise of the Money People. Easton is one of those prominent people in the federal government. He's DoD's deputy CFO. We are talking about DoD's path toward audit readiness this hour. He says it is a marathon, not a sprint. Congress has given the Pentagon specific deadlines to cross the finish line, though. At the same time, those same lawmakers have done a lot to make it an uphill run over the past year or so.
We've been hearing a lot from the comptroller's office over the past year, but it hasn't really been much about audit. It's been about whatever particular iteration of budget uncertainty we've been in at the given moment. How has that impacted this entire process?
I think that first and foremost, the budget uncertainty that is, I think Secretary Hale has said, and I certainly would agree, is unprecedented, has, as a minimum, created a significant distraction in terms of what we would call bandwidth. In other words, there's only 24 hours in a day, and to focus on a set of priorities in a very, very dynamic environment is difficult. And so this budget uncertainty has created a great distraction. And so folks that would want to be emphasizing and communicating many of the changes that we've talked about, some of them may be larger than others, have been dealing with other issues related to the budget uncertainty, things like going through the process of notifying people to say of a potential furlough eventuality, and going through those things is important, because we need to take care of our people, but it also is time-consuming. And so it can't help but distract. There may be other areas that are impacted relative to travel, to the extent that you were using a strategy that required you to travel to local facilities or camps, posts, and stations and communicate that change. We're going to be more constrained on things like travel. So there's some real things, but the leadership, the impact in terms of leadership time and attention probably has been the most serious.
Let's talk about your financial management community, even though they're not the only ones that are responsible for this process. But I know one of the things that you've been working on is establishing course-based certification program for the financial management workforce. You want to bring us up to date on where that is?
And I hope that you'll have an opportunity to focus maybe another spot just on that, because I think that when I talk to Secretary Hale in terms of things that I think where his tenure since he's become the CFO will be most dramatically felt for years to come, this is one of them. I clearly think that the audit, you know, will make a long-term difference in terms of how we execute our funds over time. But this issue of course-based certification, I think, is very, very important. We've, as you recall, we had authority in the 2012 NDAA to be able to pursue this program. And really, really it provides a framework, because what we're trying to do is not necessarily start with a clean sheet of paper. We have a very dedicated financial management workforce. We have portfolios of courses that I think are very, very good. But what we've tried to do is we've tried to step back. We've tried to look at competencies. We've identified about 23 specific competencies. And then we've tried to organize our courses to be able to relate the course outcomes to those competencies. And we started a pilot program already. Actually, we're in the middle of a pilot program involving approximately 600 people and 13 different organizations to be able to evaluate that process.
And so are you standing up a new schoolhouse to do this, or is it happening in the context of other training that happens across the department? How mechanically does that work?
I think more the latter. I mean, what we're trying to do is we're standing up an automated tool, a learning management tool that will allow us to keep track of how people progress into this framework. As I look back, because I spent much of my career in uniform, our military does a superb job of being able to identify and build warfighting skills as you go through a career. And so an officer or an enlisted member, you know, can build their career in a well-documented way as they progress through jobs and schools and so forth. And so we're trying to do that with the financial management community. In many cases, we're trying to emulate the acquisition community as well to be able to do it. But largely it's taking advantage of the courses that we already have. Break them into competencies and break them into points in your career. So if it's sort of as you're beginning a framework, you'd be at one level, sort of a journeyman at another level, and then as more senior positions at a third level.
And I would have to imagine that you're tailoring this to be common and department-wide to the maximum extent possible, rather than letting the services tailor it to their own processes.
Absolutely. I mean, we're trying to, in many cases, this is another, you know, when I think about the audit, I think about some of the challenges that we have, because what we want to try to do, each of the components, for example, have their own culture and their own traditions, and we don't want to lose what's good about that, but we think that there's value in trying to standardize as much as we can. So certainly that framework is going to be a standard framework that all financial managers will progress through. And if you talk to Beth McGrath and the DCMO organization, what we're trying to do is we're trying to create a business environment that will allow users to be able to take advantage of some of the local value and the culture, but at the same time recognize the value of standardizing things and being able to operate from a business perspective as an enterprise.
Mm-hmm. Another area that I know you work closely on with DCMO is these large ERP systems. The DOD IG reported last year that among the systems that they looked at, every single one had cost overruns. I think the final tally, again, just in those systems was $8 billion so far. A, how important are those to getting to where you need to go? And B, why have those systems been such a tough nut for the department?
They have been very difficult for all of the same reasons that we talked about for the audit. You know, if you have not stepped back and looked at your business end to end, and you try to implement the system the way that you had been doing business before, the system will give you feedback. that it doesn't like that, doesn't understand why you need that flexibility. It wants you to process transactions in, you know, in a sequential way. And in some cases, we find that we need to do things a little bit differently, but more often than not, we need to step back and we need to change our business. And so some of that has generated some of the cost increases and delays. You need to be careful to put that into context, because many of those systems, the Army General Fund Enterprise Business System is up across the Army. Likewise, the system at DLA, the Navy Enterprise Resource Program, is fully through their program of record. And so many of these systems are in the hand, literally in the hands of thousands and thousands of people today. And so we're going to get better, and we will get the business value out of that. Admittedly, when we look back, our track record has not been as good as we had hoped for. If I can say a couple things about the audit, the relationship to the audit,
please.
We were finding ourselves looking at these systems as something that we had to have for the audit. And I think that we need these systems to be able to sustain auditability. But in many cases, the people aspect, training and experience, the process aspect, those things will also help us do better on systems. But more than needing them to get to audit, we need them to sustain the audit. And so when Secretary Panetta said he wanted us to move forward in 2014 to achieve that interim milestone, that priority for our budgetary execution, it was a little bit of a change in thought process. And so we're gonna go to audit with the systems that we have. But we know those large, modern enterprise resource program systems will help us cost effectively sustain those changes and make those audits downstream less expensive.
As far as going to audit with the systems that you have, I mean, doesn't that by necessity require you to sort of institutionalize old bad business processes and legacy systems that you want to get rid of and don't want to use for the long term? I mean, aren't you pouring a bunch of resources into the audit process just so you can say we checked the box and did an audit rather than actually improving?
We certainly hope not. I mean, I can understand how you might draw that conclusion. What we're trying to do, and Congress in the last NDAA tried to give us a pointer. I mean, we think that we already knew that. You know, if in fact we find that there are things in it, we don't want to make significant investments. We may find that we need to invest more in compensating controls. Maybe it costs us a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
If in fact we find that we need to make major investments or we need to hire armies of people because we're using these older systems, Congress has said to us, come tell us that. And so we will, we have not found that situation widely, but we're prepared for it. And that tells me that we understand exactly what we need to do, which is good as well. So, we want to try to avoid that situation, to say we're not trying to just do this once. Because as one young Marine asked me when I was speaking to a group of Marines, trying to compliment them and keep them motivated as they went through their audit, the Marine said, "Sir," he goes, "you mean we have to do this every year?" And the answer is yes. What we want to do is we want to get into a mode where we can sustain this. I mean, it'll get into, I was using sort of the fitness analogy. In other words, we have to be able to run this race every year, and so we're not going to be sprinting. I mean, it's a marathon, and so we need to be able to treat it that way. And it starts with just doing business in a more disciplined, better documented way on a day-to-day basis.
Mark Easton is the Defense Department's Deputy Chief Financial Officer. Back with one more segment on DOD's progress toward passing its first audit in just a few minutes. This is on DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. I'm Jared Serbin. Welcome back to On DOD on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM. This week's show, part of this station's week-long series on federal financial management. It's called Rise of the Money People. He is DOD's deputy CFO, and we are just wrapping up an hour with him on DOD's push toward audit readiness.
I want to talk real briefly about the audit standards themselves, which my impression is they have been mostly imported from the commercial, the business world. Correct me if you disagree with that. But when you look at the standards themselves, are there ones that you look at and say, well, geez, this really doesn't make that much sense in a government organization or in DOD particularly, or that we're spending an enormous amount of money implementing this particular standard, but it's really not delivering any business value for us? Do those situations happen?
We have not found those yet. The audit standards are based on generally accepted accounting principles. The Government Accountability Office has a group that identifies an audit manual, and so I think that they're trying to thoughtfully apply those standards to the federal government, and admittedly the rest of the federal government is in varying stages of, well, most of them are receiving a clean opinion. Homeland Security, I think, is probably the last, and it's moving very quickly to a clean opinion. Probably some of the standards on property valuation are the ones that are, we're focusing, that's balance sheet kinds of things. We have at least initially taken the position that we think some of those standards for military equipment don't make sense. You've heard Secretary Hale say that he doesn't intend to sell off the fleet, if you will, or the Pentagon, jokingly, of course. But at the same time, the audit community has also come around and to be able to trying to tailor those standards to make them fit. As we get smarter, and this is one thing, Jared, I would say, is that 5 years ago, and I was working on this issue pretty diligently, but I'm a lot smarter now. And I think many people that you talk to are smarter. And so I think that as we approach particularly issues like that, we're more apt to be able to surface them, to say this standard needs to change. I found that in many cases there's a standard that says if you're doing something that's not cost effective, you shouldn't be doing that. So as we move closer to full auditability, we're going to look for those things and either go after a change in the standard or request some kind of relief.
Gotcha. We haven't gotten to the why this matters question yet, and I want to before we run out of time. Apart from, meeting congressional mandates, which is important, obviously, how is this important beyond doing an audit for audit's sake? What does getting to audit readiness do for you as a department?
Two things I would mention. I think there's a slide that I use that has maybe four, but I'll pick the two that I think are the most important. One is the public confidence issue. You mentioned one thing that you would find people in Congress that translate a lack of audit to not knowing anything about where we're spending the money. And we very strongly disagree with that, but we can understand the private sector, much of the federal government has that. So public confidence is very, very important. But another theme, I think, and another issue is better insight and granularity into exactly how we're spending the money at a given point in time, the timeliness and accuracy of the information. And so we have this initiative called Financial Improvement and Audit Readiness. The emphasis the reason that we put financial improvement first is because that's really the most important thing, accurate and timely information that we can make better decisions. I think that since this is not only the last week of March Madness, it's also the week that the president will present his budget, I think that you will see a continuing theme that focuses on savings and efficiencies, that focuses on more disciplined use of resources. And I think that we've started and we're down that track. I consider the audit and our ability to be able to have greater insight into the financial information is critical as we get into what has to be very, very difficult budget times. And so that would be my bumper sticker. Better quality, timely, accurate financial information will allow us to get more out of the program.
And finally, 2014 is just around the corner, your next legal deadline for, as you mentioned before, the auditable statement of budgetary resources. As you sit here today, what's your level of confidence that you'll meet that?
I think Bob Hale was asked that same question when he was testifying before the House Armed Services Committee, and it was during the football season, and so he said he thought he was at midfield and driving. So I certainly would want to stick with that analogy. I think that as we get into the red zone, we've got two things. We've got some significant challenges, and the clock is running. I think that those two constraints, we're going to have to turn to our advantage. I think that the 2014 date, as I mentioned, we're hopeful about the Marine Corps results. We're going to have to be able to translate those lessons. We've actually, to be able to, you know, as we get into the red zone, as we're driving towards the goal line for 2014, we're looking at things that we can do to try to streamline, try to make it easy, a little bit easier in terms of the process. But it involves getting our examinations moving in on a broader scale. So I'm very optimistic. I think it's going to be a difficult as we get down towards the goal line. The going's going to get pretty tough, but I think that we're well positioned. And I give Secretary Hale, Secretary Panetta, Secretary Carter, Ash Carter just chaired a meeting, and I think that the senior leadership focus on this is clearly there. But we're going to have to execute the plays to be able to get over the goal line.
Well, Mark Easton, it's been a very interesting hour. Thanks so much for talking with us.
Thank you.
Mark Easton is the Defense Department's Deputy Chief Financial Officer. He was good enough to join us for a full hour to talk about DOD's progress toward preparing for a full audit of its financial statements. It's part of Federal News Radio series, Rise of the Money People. And there are plenty more fresh interviews on the topic of federal financial management at federalnewsradio.com. Would encourage you to check it out. This full conversation you heard today with Mark Easton will be there as well. You can download it at any time. Thanks for joining us. We will be back with another edition of On DOD next week. I'm Jared Serbin. So long.
You've been listening to On DOD with Federal News Radio DOD reporter Jared Serbu. If you missed any part of this program, you can hear the entire show on our website, federalnewsradio.com. On DOD, Wednesday afternoons at 2, only on Federal News Radio, 1500 AM.